Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, AWM Program Director Allison Sansoni chats with Lilium Rivera about her latest middle grade novel, Never Look Back, which blends a touch of magical realism into a timely story about cultural identity, overcoming trauma, and the power of first love. This program originally took place November 10th, 2020, and was recorded live via Zoom. This program is presented in conjunction with our exhibit My America, Immigrant and Refugee Writers Today, which you can explore in person at the American Writers Museum or online at my-america.org. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
We're grateful to all of you for being here and for valuing the past, present, and future of American writing. My name is Allison Sansoni, and I'm the program director here at the museum. This program today is the latest in the Jean and John Rowe program series, My America, Immigrant and Refugee Writers Today. It's presented in conjunction with the exhibit of the same name that is at our museum on Michigan Avenue in Chicago or online at my-america.org. The exhibit and series honors the contributions to American writing from those Americans who came here or whose ancestors came here from far away. This program is supported in part by the Ephraimson Family Fund for Youth Education. The ancient Greek myth of Orpheus and Eurydice has been told and retold thousands of times over the years as the story of a love that challenged even the rules of the gods of heaven and hell. Today, we're talking with Lilium Rivera, who's taken this myth and remixed it into an Afro-Caribbean story about cultural identity, overcoming trauma, and the power of first love. Lilium is an award-winning writer and author of the young adult novels, Dealing in Dreams, The Education of Margot Sanchez, the middle grade novel, Goldie Vance, The Hotel Whodunit. And her work has appeared in the Washington Post, the New York Times, and Elle, to name a few places. She has joined us this morning from Los Angeles to talk about writing and her new book, Never Look Back. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. Well, I'll say good morning because I'm calling in from Los Angeles. So good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for being here. It's still technically morning here.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I wanted to start by talking about your new book. So the Orpheus and Eurydice myth has been mined many times by storytellers, including the Tony Award-winning musical Hadestown that came out last year. Why did you decide to work with this particular story, and why has it so captured our imaginations over the years?
I love the Orpheus and Eurydice story. I love it because it's a love story, and it encompasses things that I love. Poetry, music, scary underworld, monsters and goddesses who are playing around with humans, all the things that I love when I was a kid growing up. And when I was around 8 years old, I saw this movie called Black Orpheus. It's a 1950s film, and it's a retelling of the Orpheus the Orpheus myth, and it's set in Brazil during Carnival. So when I saw that movie, and I was very young, and I didn't even know the myth, but I fell in love with this movie, and I fell in love with the story. And that's when I started to, it's a Greek myth. I started reading about it, and I became like a big fan of it. And so this was a story that I knew maybe in my future that I would be able to try to write it in a way that I could create the setting for myself, that I could include, you know, Caribbean folk tales and myths, and just sort of like a remix of that old story that's been retold again and again, and sort of make it my own.
Why do you think that story has such staying power?
I think it's a story that we could all kind of relate. It's a story not only about young love, but it's also a story of overcoming that. And I know that the myth is tragedy. And if you read the myth, most myths are all tragic. But I love this idea of how these two young people find a way of overcoming it, find a way of like, I'm going to travel to the ends of the world to be able to save each other in a lot of ways. And so that's the way I came to the myth. I was like, I wanted to really write about the story of two young people just doing maybe the most bravest thing that they can do.
Music is a huge part of the story. What music did you listen to while you wrote, and how does music play a part in the book?
Oh man, music is a big deal for me. I'll just show you because I love the cover so much. But when I was writing the novel, I always knew that they were going to be Afro-Latino, right? So Fierce is Dominican and Yuri is Puerto Rican from Puerto Rico, right? And so when I was thinking of these two characters, I immediately knew that I would have bachata music because bachata is from Dominican Republic and just very root, like a rooted kind of traditional kind of music that's very much about love and lamentations and is very sexy. And I loved it so much. So I was listening to bachata music all day long. And then also some, you know, songs from Puerto Rico. But for the most part, it was Romeo Santos. It was just all Aventura, all these kind of like bachata music that I knew of, but I became even more into it when I was when I started writing the story.
It sounds like the book should have a playlist.
Oh, it does. it's on Spotify. If you want to hear it, it has great music. And it's on Spotify through Bloomsbury, through the publishing. So definitely listen to it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So what is this, the modern setting that you brought these characters into?
Yeah, I'm from the Bronx, originally from the Bronx, New York. And so I like to write about the Bronx. You know, I live in Los Angeles, but my family's still there. And before pandemic, I would go there almost once a month. And so I knew that I would set it in the Bronx, but I wanted it to be set in the Bronx. I also wanted it to be, you know, this idea that the Bronx is magical, that there's magical elements throughout the city, throughout the Bronx. And so I wanted to really it be a love letter to the Bronx, New York, and a love letter to Puerto Rico, which is another place that I yearn to go to every time. And the last time I was there was in January, and I miss it so much. So it really was like Never Look Back is like a love letter of how magical and beautiful these two places are.
When the characters have such a rich cultural background, and it's so distinct and authentic in the book, how do you, as a writer, how do you communicate a character's cultural background to your readers?
Well, it's important because it's important for me to do research. So even though I'm writing about the Bronx and I grew up in the Bronx, it does not matter. I have to do a lot of research about places and locations, but also about how people talk, how young people talk. And so, you know, I'm not Dominican, I'm not Afro-Latino, I'm none of those things. So I have to make doubly sure that I'm doing it right. So I hire editors before. I had my own editor. My editors hired some people. Like it was not just me writing something and just hoping that it's correct. No, I really make sure that I look at the myths, I look at the folklore, I look at locations, everything, and I just really make sure that I get it right. Because it's important to me, and I take everything that I do very seriously. So, I mean, it's a story and I love telling stories, but I also, if I'm writing outside of what my own experience is, I want to make sure that I'm talking to other people and just double checking that I'm doing it correctly.
Yeah. One of the things that we've interviewed a lot of authors for this series from a lot of different backgrounds, and one of the things that they've all talked about is the idea of representation, of being seen as a voice for a particular community, and sort of the pressure and also the opportunity that creates. Do you feel that at any point in your career?
Oh yes, even in this book. Specifically because I was writing about Puerto Rico and not writing about a girl whose parents came from Puerto Rico. No, I'm writing specifically about an island girl who grew up there, who that's her home. I don't live in Puerto Rico, so I felt this huge responsibility to make sure that I represented things that made sense, you know, that that I wasn't overstepping in any kind of way. And so, you know, this is, you know, and again, I'm writing, you know, a boy's point of view. I have to, all these things I have to just double check and just, you know, I don't take anything for granted. Like I'm just because, you know, my name is Lillian Rivera does not mean that I have the authority to write all kinds of Latino, you know, stories. I have the authority to be free and open. You know, I believe that everyone should write whatever they want, but I have a huge responsibility to make sure that I get it right. And so it was a big deal for me to write about her because she was a girl who had to leave Puerto Rico because of Hurricane Maria. And this is something that has happened to countless families, to countless young people who had to leave the island. And it's not that they wanted to leave. It's that there was no resources there tying them, or, you know, they had to leave. So I always had this idea of like, this is like this amazing thought of like, yes, my parents left Puerto Rico when they were young. And I, you know, there's this mentality of like, oh, they went because they wanted to have a better life. And I'm like, actually, they were forced to leave their home. You know, that they, it wasn't like a, like this, you know, this is home. Like I would be devastated if I had to make that choice, you know? So I always have that in mind when I'm thinking of these characters and this idea of like, what is home, and just, you know, these huge decisions that are made by parents and young people at the same time, you know? So yeah, I take everything very seriously. I don't write, you know, I write stories, but I'm like, it's a huge burden and I want to make sure that I don't mess up.
Yeah. I just want to remind folks as we're talking that if you'd like to ask a question, we're going to have you type it into the Q&A box in the middle of the bottom of your screen. And include your name and your school, and we'll get to those questions in just a few minutes. Tell us a little bit about the importance of language in your work and how moving a story forward works for you. Do you work in multiple languages? Do you think in multiple languages? Mm-hmm. How does that work for you?
Sometimes there's a word that doesn't come out that in Spanish, it means it's in Spanish. And I all of a sudden I'll say it. And it's like, I was explaining it to someone the other day. I was like, oh, you know, the word ternura. And I was like, and they were like, what? And I'm like, oh, tenderness. And to me, ternura is beautiful. It's such a beautiful word. And it really doesn't encompasses the word tenderness in an even better way. So sometimes there are words that I had a conversation the other day. The person was speaking who could only speak Spanish. And I could only, you know, and my Spanish is good, but not great. And it was literally a conversation in Spanglish. It was amazing because he would say things that were like just in Spanish. And I was like, I understood completely. And then I'll be like, oh, but how about this? And I would break it in both languages. And it was, I don't know, that's the way I grew up. You know, my parents speak Spanish and I speak to them in Spanish. And then I might speak to my cousins in English and Spanish. And so my books are sort of a mixture sometimes like that, you know, depending on, I feel Yuri, who's Puerto Rican, would mostly speak Spanish, but she speaks English too, but she's dreaming in Spanish. She's, you know, her life is all in Spanish and that's home, you know? And so the way that Yuri and Fierce communicate is really through music, you know, it's really through bachata and, oh, here's a song, you know, or it's through Prince, or here's another song, you know? And so that's what I love. It's like, I think music is the ultimate like translator in a way, or the communicator, you know?
Well, it's really intimate, right? When you send someone a song or a link to a song, you're saying this matters to me, right? And I want you to hear what matters to me.
Oh, yes. I mean, playlists, I don't know, but back in the day it was mixtapes we would make, and we would record our tapes, and now it's playlists. And I create playlists all the time, and I'm just like, here's a playlist for you.
they're a love letter.
Yes, they are. It is like you are spending time and thinking about how can I reach this person? And that's exactly what Fierce does with his music. He's like, how can I reach Yuri? How can I reach her in the underworld? I'm going to sing this song that's going to reach other worlds, you know? And that to me is like powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of translation, do you face pressure, or have you faced pressure in your career to sort of translate your work for, you know, for white audiences to, you know, in order to make it more understandable to them? Do you, you know, and how do you deal with that?
I did in the beginning of my writing career. Like I, you know, this is before I got public, you know, an agent or a book contract. I would share my stories in writers group or what have you. And I would get pushback of like, oh, if you put Spanish in the beginning of your story, you're going to alienate readers. And then, so then back then I didn't have the words to express what I would say now, which is, you know, what readers are you talking about? You know, like, what is it that we're really saying in this context? Is like, the readers you're talking about are people who don't speak Spanish or are white. And so then my thing is like, my readers are going to find my books. And I read The Hobbit. What half those words were saying, like, they didn't make sense to me. But I didn't care because I was in the story. It did not matter to me if they were making up words. I was willingly following their journey, these characters' journey. And I know readers will willingly follow my journey too. So I've grown to... It all depends on the character. If the character is really about using a lot of Spanish, then the character will use a lot of Spanish. But I've grown to like, you know, sometimes you don't really need to explain every single Spanish word. Sometimes you will get it. And I promise you, you will get it. It's not that hard. So that's how I've grown to do it. But back then I was just like, I knew what she was saying or whoever was saying it was wrong. But at the time, because I was so young and so really wanting to get a story right, I was just like, maybe they have a point. But that point didn't last very long.
Your point, if white people can learn Klingon, there's really no excuse.
It's not that hard. Not
to follow, to learn another language, to follow along. Yeah. I love the Hobbit example. I'm going to use that. What was your early writing life like when you were a student? Who in your life encouraged you to write?
Oh, yes. I was an extremely shy person all my life. I was very quiet, very shy. I didn't speak up. My whole family, I grew up in a big, loud Puerto Rican family, but I was not a loud person. So everyone around me was like getting a lot of attention and I was not. I was hiding behind my journal. So I spent a lot of my time writing. I didn't write fiction. I just wrote in my journal. And it took me, it was in high school, my English teacher, I had to submit a short story and the short story was funny. And he was like, you wrote this story? Like he couldn't believe it because I was so quiet and so shy and I never said anything in that class. And so he couldn't believe that I actually had, I don't know, I was humorous, you know, I could write. And so this English teacher, Mr. Latimer, pushed me into joining the school newspaper. And it was the best thing that could have happened to me because it forced me to get out of my shell and I was able to focus on someone else. And I was able to interview people and I was good at it. And that's how I began my writing journey. I started as a journalist, but it was really Mr. Latimer who pushed me into doing something that I was like, horrified at first, but then I was like, okay, for whatever reason, I said yes. And I did the school newspaper, high school newspaper. And then I began my journey of being in magazine, you know, writing for magazines and newspapers.
How did your family react to you choosing writing as a career?
Oh man, my family is like most families, especially most families of color. They did not like it. They were scared because to them, being an artist really means living in poverty. You know, it's a struggle and they don't want me to struggle. So my father made sure that I learned how to type because he thought, you know, at least she could work in an office. And it's true. I worked in many offices throughout my years, because I will take a job when I was in between, not journal, you know, when I decided I wasn't going to be a journalist and I was going to write a book, I took whatever job I could that was manning an office, you know, and then I could write, you know, I had time to write my own stuff. But yeah, but now they're, you know, they're able to, they can hold it. It's a real thing. So it's a big deal for them.
They can see your name on it.
It's official.
Why do you write for young adults and children?
Oh, I love writing young adults. I love writing middle grade. I love comic books, short stories. The thing is that whenever I started writing fiction, I would always come up with, it always came like a 16-year-old girl. It never failed. I was always in high school and for whatever reason. And so, and it was always the dialogue. And I always had fun writing that kind of that young dialogue. I can't say it comes easily, but it's where I love to write. I love writing in that young mindset. I feel like it's a discovery of first. It's like when you first discover your first love, or you discover that your family is flawed, you know, they're full of faults and have unrealized dreams. I mean, this is like that period of time when you discover so much about yourself and about your surrounding as well. So I love that. I love trying to capture that.
Who are the writers that you read growing up? And did you see yourself in a lot of stories as a young reader?
When I was growing up, I didn't see myself for sure. I mean, I had to wait until I was in college, until I read Toni Morrison, and maybe I read, you know, Sandra Cisneros. But it was in college. I mean, it took a really long time. So when I was growing up, I was reading everything. I love reading. So I read, you know, like I mentioned, I read The Hobbit. I would read fantasy. I would read Stephen King and scary books, Ray Bradbury, The Martian Chronicles, all about Mars, you know, Martians invading, all this kind of amazing stuff. And it didn't matter to me because I always imagined the characters brown or black in my head. Like I imagine myself in these stories, you know, so it didn't really matter who was writing them. But I would read all those things. One of my favorites is definitely Frankenstein. I'll read all retellings of Frankenstein because Mary Shelley wrote it when she was really young. And it really, I feel the creature is like one of the first teenagers, because all he wants to do is like get the attention of his father or the creator. So I love that story. I read it almost once a year.
Well, I want to get to as many student questions as we can. And I want to remind folks to type them in your Q&A box at the bottom of your screen while we're talking here. But before we do that, I was wondering if there was a piece that you wanted to read to us from Never Look Back.
Yeah, I'll read a short piece. It's the book is told in alternating points of view. So you'll have Yuri speak for a chapter, and then Fierce will speak in another chapter. And in this short excerpt, it's Yuri who's speaking. And they're both in front of her, the apartment that she's staying at in the Bronx, in the stairwell, which is where most kids hang out anyway. Okay, so I'll begin. I slip the earbud into my ear and wait for Fierce to press play. The first thing I hear is the sound of the guitar, strings being plucked harmoniously. I can almost see the fingers creating the music, setting the tone, inviting me to let go. Soon, a man's voice reaches me with this beautiful declaration of love. The singer, Jose Manuel Calderon, repeats the word amorcito, and I am filled with sentimientos. Of all the instruments in the world, the guitar is the one that connects me most to the island. The tactual feel of the fingers against the string, the changing of the chords. It's hard to explain why I'm drawn to the guitar, to put to words the emotions the strings elicit. This is why I love Prince so much, and it's why I sit here next to Fierce. I close my eyes to envision the sweeping sound of this song and how it's meant only for me. I let the music envelop me, feeling such yearning. Can we stay here on these dirty steps together, listening to music? I want that more than anything. I can feel his breath brush against my hand. Besides him, at this very moment, there's no fear, no evil waiting, no doubts. For now, there's only Fierce. Who doesn't want love?
when it's new, especially.
Yes.
Yeah. We can take a few of the student questions now. Just type them into the Q&A box with your name and your school. The first one is from Belinda, who wants to know, when writing Never Look Back, what did it feel like? She's a poet, and she says, when I try to come up with some poetry, I feel serene and dumbfounded and creative. How do you feel when you're writing?
Poets. I love poets. I have to say, that's the one thing that I can't write. I can't write poetry, but I always have collection of poetry next to my bedside, because I always want to be inspired. So I highly, recommend reading poetry as much as possible if you're a writer or an artist, you know. How did it make me feel writing Never Look Back? I have to say that it was both parts hard and both parts liberating. Because I was writing about something that was really affected my family personally. You know, Hurricane Maria destroyed a lot of people in Puerto Rico, and specifically I had an uncle who was 80 years old and went missing. Like, we could not find him. He lives in the mountains, and a lot of mountains were unreachable. And so I had to go on social media everywhere to just try to find someone to try to get to him. And it was heartbreaking, and I was really torn up. And so writing Never Look Back was hard for me, because I really felt for Yudi and I really felt for her pain. But it also, I was writing towards hope. And so then that always pushed me towards, like, I knew I was going to write towards hope. I knew I was writing towards love. And so that was what kept me going, that I knew it was going to be okay in some way. You know, I just knew it. So, but it was hard. And sometimes when things are hard for you, that's when you get some really good writing.
Our next question is from Zoe, from August and Laura Academy. My question is, was writing your favorite subject?
Was writing my favorite subject? Yes. And I am still, it still is. I could tell you, because I have to go over my kids' math and I'm like, I don't know what's happening. This is a whole new language that I don't understand. I'm like, I could get into the English, you know. I'm like, we were going over The Great Gatsby and an essay, and I was helping my kid write an essay. I love that stuff. But math, I don't, that's like a new language. So yes, writing is my favorite subject, still is.
We have a teacher question from Patricia Hernandez. She says, I especially appreciate you talking about the value of Spanglish. Can you tell us about your language development as a child? How did you navigate home language and academic and social language?
Oh man, thank you so much for asking that question. I always forget that when I first got into school, like first kindergarten and first grade, I was in classes, English as a second language classes, you know, like I must have been fluent only in Spanish for a while in the beginning. And my English was horrible. Like, my English writing was horrible, which is so, all the way to college. In college, I had to take a remedial English class. And I was so angry. But it ended up being a great class, because everybody in the class was like, I'm so angry too. But we ended up having like great discussion about language, you know, and this, the idea of control and who gets to tell the story and how to tell the story. Yeah, so now it's just, sometimes I'll read Spanish, you know, in Spanish, and I'll just read it aloud to remind myself that, you know, I live in Los Angeles, so I could speak to a lot of people in Spanish, but I forget, you know, and I'm like, oh, I love this language. I just want to listen to it all the time.
A question from Alex. What was your first book?
What was the first book that I wrote or I read?
I think he meant that you wrote.
Okay. My first book that I wrote was The Education of Margot Sanchez. And it was a coming of age story set in the Bronx about a girl who's forced to work at her father's supermarket when she gets caught stealing his credit card to buy fancy clothes for her fancy school friends. And the book is great because it's the first book that's actually translated in Spanish. And that came out this year. So I was able to send copies of the book to my family in Puerto Rico, and that was really wonderful. So my aunt called me and she was going over the word, you know, and then this happened. Like, it was amazing. So yeah, that's my first book.
I have a question from Gabrielle. Which perspective are your books usually written in?
It depends. I usually write from first person point of view. And so with Never Look Back, it's told in alternating points of view. So I have Fierce telling his side, and I have Beauty telling her side. I've always mostly written from first point of view. And but my next book, hopefully that comes out next year, I hope, is that it'll be in a third person. So it'll be different. So I'm just trying to challenge myself to do things that are a little uncomfortable, and just force myself to do things that are different, you know, so I won't stay stagnant.
I have another teacher question from Sonia Adams. I'm an adjunct professor of English at St. John's University. Who are some writers and other creatives that have influenced your writing?
Oh, I love for young adults, I love Meg Medina and Matt De La Peña. Those are two authors who started off, you know, before, you know, have been in the game for a little bit longer. I also love Victor Laval, who's an author from Queens, and he writes short stories, but he's also written comic books and amazing, like, scary fairy tales. And I really love his work, and I find myself gravitating towards him and Ted Chiang. And Marco Shiro is another young adult author who's current, you know, and Elana K. Arnold is another one who I really love. So I always find myself falling for authors who are doing a lot of different things, a lot of speculative or magical realism or retellings or a mixture of all of those things. And so I'm always excited to read, oh, who's doing something different or new. And so I pick up books all the time and I devour them.
Well, and that's, I was wondering about, you know, something sort of tangential to that, which is, do you have a community of other writers that you talk to about your writing?
I do. I share my writing. Like, I used to be in groups, writers group, but I don't have writers group, but I do have community of people who I write, who I, you know, ask for advice, and I'll ask them, can you read this? You know, maybe a chapter or two, because reading a whole novel is a big investment. You're asking a lot for people. So I try not to do that unless I'm going to reciprocate and be able to read their novel, you know. So, but I do ask for advice. So group chats are amazing because I'm able to, like, oh, I don't know. Should I do this? Do I, what do you think? And it's wonderful. So I don't do this alone because I would be, you know, writing is such a solitary thing. You need a community no matter what. So.
We have a question from Leslie from Lara Academy. What's your favorite part of your book and why?
Oh, that's a good question. My favorite part of the book, if you read it, is a chapter. I think it's chapter 20 something. I forgot. I should memorize the chapter. It's one of my favorites because it's set in the underworld and it combines everything that is kind of real, like it looks like so you're familiar, but it's inversed, it's changed up. So all these things that you think of it's almost Dominican, you know, culture or whatever, or maybe New York culture, is like the hookah and dancing and bachata and all this kind of like music and all this stuff, and I inverse it and I make it kind of scary. It's one of my favorite chapters in it because I was like, oh, this is good. It's a little scary. I like it.
It's like asking you to pick your favorite child, right?
I know. It's a little, yeah.
a similar question from Isaac. Which was your favorite book to write?
Ooh, asking my favorite baby. I do like, I like Never Look Back because it was my most personal book. It talks, you know, I didn't mention this, but it does have, talks about, mental health issues and, you know, that's something in our Latino community that we have to really kind of fight for, you know, like break down the stigma when it comes to like asking for mental help, you know? And so that was a big deal for me. So it was really, so I really love this story because I'm proud that I'm trying to have that conversation, like open up that conversation about it's okay to ask for help. And it's okay to also have faith and go to church and pray, but let's, you know, both are okay. So these are things that I want to kind of break down this wall of like that asking for help. If you're suffering from any kind of mental illness or anything, is not a bad thing, that it's okay.
I have a question. What was your favorite book when you were a middle schooler?
Middle schooler. So long ago. What was I reading back? Okay. I mean, I was always reading things that I shouldn't be reading. So I was reading like Interview of a Vampire. I wasn't supposed to be reading that, but I read it. Because I love vampires and Dracula. You know, I watched Lost Boys, all those films. Actually, if you guys watched anything on Netflix, the, what was that? Vampire versus the Bronx is hilarious movie on Netflix. And it's literally like all those movies that I used to watch when I was a kid. It's like Goonies and Lost Boys combined, but it's in the Bronx. It's perfect. So yeah, I'm sure I was reading some sort of Dracula film Dracula book that I shouldn't be reading.
We have a question from Leslie. I heard you read about Greek myths. I personally love reading myths, especially Greek myths. What other Greek myths did you read about and which ones did you like?
Oh, so I was so immersed in the Orpheus retelling that I watched everything. I watched the Hades Town Broadway show. I went to see it before everything, you know, shut down. What's the other myth? I guess my thing is I know this is funny and this is weird, but I really love, I grew up reading the Bible. I grew up Catholic. So to me, a lot of the stories I love are all in the Bible. So I was more into the Bible than I was into Greek myths, because I felt like if you read the Bible and if you look at Greek myths too, you'll see the stories are being told again and again. I'm super fascinated. I mean, think about this idea of what was it? Lot's wife turned back and was turned into stone. Like there was, you know, there's this one story there that I was super fascinated with. And I'm like, oh, this is reminiscent of Orpheus and Eurydice. Like it's like stories are told and retold and retold. So to me, I was always into like, I wanted to find the similarities between the Bible and the Greek myths that I was reading.
So speaking of Hades Town, I'm very jealous, by the way, that you got to see that show. I fell down a rabbit hole about it about a year ago and just, yeah, can't stop reading about it.
So good.
But speaking of that, do you, we have a question here from Jennifer Luna. Do you like any musicals?
Oh yeah. I'm such an obnoxious musical person. I mean, I can't sing, but I'll force everyone in my house to hear me. I've watched all the musicals. You know, I do love Hades Town, but I watch even old ones like On the Town, you know, like the really kind of cool ones that came out back in the day. I've watched the Sondheim ones. I've watched, what was the one that's a Cabaret? I'll watch it in movie and then I'll go and I'll see it on Broadway. And then, you know, so when I would go to New York, I would always try to see, oh, what's on Broadway? Maybe I could watch a musical or something. Like I would find a cheap ticket because, you know, it's really expensive. But, you know, I would try to figure out a way of doing that. So, yeah, I'm kind of corny. Not corny. I love musicals. It's not corny.
It's like you said before, you're talking about when you talk about musicals, like a lot of these, especially the older ones, when they get revivals, it's a retelling, right? It's a restaging of a story. So it follows.
It's so true, right? Because I've seen, let's say, just for example, Cabaret, and then I saw a retelling of it in on Broadway, and it was a totally different vibe. And so I'm like, this is super fascinating. So I love it, but I love when it's a mixture, right? Because even if you all talk about Hamilton, I love that it was a mixture, right? It's like a lot of young people of color are actually in the forefront. And that to me was fascinating. And so is Hadestown, which I loved. It's so good. The music is amazing.
I have a question from Rosa Maria Lopez from Lara Academy. When did you start your career as a writer, or when did you realize you wanted to be a writer?
So I mentioned before, I was I did journalism first. So I when I got up out of college, I started writing in for magazines. Like I wrote, I was on staff for Latina magazine, which is a lifestyle magazine that came out a while back. And then I would just jump around magazines, and then I ended up in LA, and I worked for E Online or E Entertainment, and I would do Fashion Police and movie premieres and all that stuff. It was a lot of fun for a long time. But in the back of my mind, I always wanted to be an author. And I didn't think it was possible, to be honest, because I just thought, it just felt like I needed to, I don't know, have an MFA. I needed to be way more smarter. I needed money. Like all these things I really believe that you had to do to be able to become a published author. So it took me a very long time to overcome that fear. And then finally I did. And then I just was determined. I still am.
A question here from a Lara Academy student. Have any personal experiences given you the inspiration to write a book?
Oh my goodness. Yes. So this is what I believe. I believe as a writer that your job is to be an observer. You're to witness things. And so to me, I have to really pay attention to what's happening. And of course, now that we're stuck at home, this is not helping with my writing. It is not. Because I need to be around people. I need to see people, how they react, how young people react. I need to travel. And, you know, school visits used to do that for me. So I could like, I remember when someone was sharing an ear pods with each other. And that's why I wrote that scene, because I remember seeing that on the train when I was traveling in New York one day. And I saw these two young girls sharing earbuds with each other and listening to music. And I thought, that is the most beautiful and intimate scene ever. You know, it's just sharing music with someone else. And so, so to me, it's important for me to be an observer, to witness things, to see things. Hopefully we'll be able to do that soon, because I can't just keep seeing these walls.
Now, you read about these people that, you know, that were hermits their entire lives and yet wrote these fantastical,
that's not me. I can't do that.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. And I want to thank all of the students from our schools and the Ephraimson Family Fund and our sponsors, Jean and John Rowe, for underwriting this program series. Thank you all for being here with us today. And if you're interested, you can look up more of our writer events that you can also join at AmericanWritersMuseum.org. Lillian Rivera, the book is Never Look Back. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me and for all these great questions. It was so much fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, we will hear from the writers who contributed to the new book, Dear McSweeney's, 2 decades of letters to the editor from writers, readers, and the occasional bewildered consumer. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.